Welcome, everyone, to KTWHLP, Two Harbors Community Radio, 99.5 on your dial, ktwh.org, on your streaming device, bringing you this week's stories behind the stories in the Lake County Press with writer and editor, Kitty Mayo. Good morning, Kitty. How are you on this just absolutely marvelous and unnatural day?
I'm good, Paul. It's very warm, isn't it, Tom?
It is. I told my wife I was embarrassed. You know, I live in northern Minnesota, and we're rough and tough, and I'm a lumberjack all day, and that's okay. And I got no snow on the ground, and I was going bareheaded and no gloves and low-quarter sneakers and perfectly comfortable, and it just ain't natural.
It's embarrassing. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And you... Enough of the idle pratter coming from yours truly here. Let's get down to the business at hand and fill me in on what our first piece is today.
I would love to do that. We're going to talk about Boathouse Bay. So if you remember this project, Tom, it's been loosely called Boathouse Bay Development up in Silver Bay, on just the edge of town there, but still in town proper.
Oh.
And it's been being worked on for 2+ years.
Well, excellent. Is this like kind of on the edge of the industrial park area or over toward Black Beach or what?
Yes, right in that vicinity, right sort of between the two of those things.
Oh, very good.
There's a bunch of acres in that area that are privately owned and by an individual named John Anderson. I got to talk to him a couple of years ago about what his hopes and dreams were, and he worked with about 2.5 years ago with David Drown, who is the economic development director for the city and also has a lot of background in municipal development. So they sort of did this vision dream plan of what this could look like as a resort and kind of look into the future sort of a thing. And ultimately, the city agreed to extend infrastructure to this area. And you can imagine all the iterations and public meetings and plotting and zoning and all the different things that have had to happen and procurement of money and asks from places like IRRRB to help fund infrastructure development. Very expensive. It's a go. I mean, I'm going to cut to the chase. They've been working on this very diligently. The city has been. They are seeing it, current leadership there, as a very positive thing that in the course of 8 years, so I can tell you more about why we're going to wait for 8 years, but I bet you could guess this development will, the hope is, the dream is, be pulling property tax revenue on short-term rentals that John Anderson intends to build there. And that is revenue for the city for maintenance and growth. So that's the dream there. The utilities being extended for the city are water and sewer and electric. It doesn't look like a great distance, but again, I don't think I have to tell you, Tom, that comes with a huge price tag. So they've finally gotten, and there's roads that need to be abandoned and new roads that need to be created. But they have finally worked out all of those finer points and details involving their city attorney, who is the same city attorney as ours, Tim Costley, for Two Harbors. So they had 15 items on the agenda.
Oh, golly.
Regarding Boathouse Bay this week. And they all were passed unanimously because none of them were surprises at all, right? It just took that much to get it done. The 8-year wait for any revenue stream to the city has to do with tax increment financing. A district was approved for tax increment financing by the city council, and that finally got signed off on last night as well. So that lasts for about 8 years. That means that no taxes are going to have to be paid on these properties that are being built for the duration of several years. But then hopefully they'll start coming in. I will say, I think the city was intelligent in that they put a 5-year expectation on the property owner that he would have X number of units built within the first 5 years so that they can start seeing some return on that investment down the road. So kind of a big deal. I hope that with all the planning that's being done, it's going to be a very beautiful resort with a lot of walking paths and retention ponds and hopefully some beautiful, like water garden type features and very natural. Right now, it's sort of just a big, empty, lumpy field.
Oh, sure. Having waded in that kind of water for several years, I can appreciate just how hard it is to get all those ducks lined them up and then keep them lined up and hope that none of them decide to fly off before things happen. You bet.
You have to say 2 years is kind of amazing to have this pulled together in 2 years, in my opinion.
Oh, sure. There's a joke about that, too, regarding elephants. But let's move on to your next piece here.
Yep. Well, what we're going to talk about next is a piece by Katya Gordon about fishing patterns on Lake Superior in this last season, the last warm season, leading really up until right now. It's still fishing season on Lake Superior. Katya talked to two or three different experts, from commercial fishermen to, her husband, who has his own business sailing on Lake Superior, people at the fisheries that do deep water temperature gauging down by McQuaid Harbor. And so it's an intricate sort of story, but she lays it out really well. Really, some fishing was way, way down, and some fishing was way, way up. It kind of depended on what you were fishing for and where you were, and whether the fish you were looking for liked warm water or not, because the water was very warm this year. So living on Lake Superior, like many of us, I'm sort of fascinated by everything that happens under the water out there. So.
Oh, sure, you bet. I'm fascinated by that as well, in particular the temperature profile according to the depth of the water, and see how that is compared over the years, if it's gradually rising or if it's just the nothing unusual. I'm suspecting that things are warming up more rapidly than they have in the past.
But I will share a fun fast fact with you that I learned from reading Katya's story, and that is the amount of ice on the, I'm not going to say it right. The amount of ice on the lake is not dictated by the temperature of the water from the previous warm season. It's complex. That's what you're going to learn when you read this story. It's really complicated. It's not as simple as you think.
Oh, sure. But what I'm getting at is the temperature profile from the lowest up toward the surface. You're going to have this thermal gradient, and without regard to the ice formations, the creatures, the plants, the fish, and whatever that live in the water have a sweet spot that they like for their temperatures, and the food stocks and the stuff that's suspended in the water that's either edible or non-edible, and it's all dependent upon the thermal profile of the water. And it would be interesting to see if the story includes any high points on the changes in the thermal gradient over the years. And go ahead.
Yep. I was going to say, there are some mentions of that. I don't want to spoil the whole story, but yes, indeed, Katya does touch on the overall warming of the lake.
Well, I guess I can wait until the paper hits my porch, and thanks for that, and to Katya as well. And what's the next thing on your list here?
Well, the next one is several pieces to the same story. Remembering John Mahady. John Mahady was born in 1958, and he died in September of 1997. And some people remember John and know a little bit about his story. He was a diver. He had a lot of experience diving. He was working for the city at the particular time that he died, at the intake from the water treatment plant on the edge of the shore. And he drowned. So the reason that I started exploring this story, the background of it, is that people that knew John and knew him in his role as a ambulance service person, which was a paid position that he worked, as well as a first responder on the rescue squad, had told me about John and said, it's been a while, and I think we should still be remembering him. So I started talking to people in the community who knew John. I talked to John's wife and his daughter, and I talked to people who had worked with him on the rescue squad, like Bob Norlin. And I just felt like everyone said, it's time. We want to talk about this. We want to remember this individual who was always there for everyone, who was the first one on every call. And in the course of this investigating about John's life and thinking I was just going to be writing a piece remembering someone who had been very important in the community, whose life ended very tragically in 1997, what I found out was that there is a real lack of volunteers signed up for the rescue squad. And it's a really important issue that's gonna, and probably already has started, affecting all of us who live here. So the story took a turn and it got kind of long, and I was able to kind of dig down deep into it. So I really hope that beyond just people learning a little bit about John or remembering him if they knew him, I hope they'll read more about what the needs are for people on the rescue squad, what the job looks like, and what the training looks like, what the expectations are, and hopefully we'll find some people to step up and fill those roles more often. I learned all kinds of stuff, Tom. I did not know that the rescue squad was completely volunteer. They have no financial benefits, none whatsoever. Their training is paid for, but they get no financial compensation or stipend or retirement benefits, nothing at all. The person I mentioned, Bob Norlin, has been on the rescue squad for 48 years, and he said he really would like to retire, but he's going to need some more people to step up. You might go out on 100 or more calls in a year, and you might show up to every single emergency, because that's what the rescue squad does. They work under the Lake County Sheriff's Department. They go on water rescues. If there's anything happening in the lake, the big lake or the small lakes in Lake County, our rescue squad volunteers are called out. They respond to all structure fires. And I didn't know this. They're on hand to help the firefighters. They help change their oxygen out. They check on them, make sure they're medically okay. They give them oxygen if they need it. They give them a bottle of water if they need a sip of water. And then they help them get their boots back on and get back in there to fight the fires more. They get them inside a warm vehicle to warm up if necessary on a cold winter night. So this is a really amazing opportunity for everyone, doesn't matter what your gender is. Bob teasingly told me they have a job for everyone. You don't have to be superhuman strength or anything like that. You're needed on the volunteer rescue squad in our county. So kind of a shout out to that.
Well, I got to tell you, there were a few things in your discussion there that just have me all wound up tighter than a cheap watch. And the foremost, I suppose, is they have responsibilities not terribly different from that from the volunteer fire department, but they get bupkis for consideration for their efforts. And there is something there that needs some checking into and seeing if there can be some kind of a something worked out in that regard. As for Mr. Mahady, an experienced diver drowning, I'm assuming this was on the job. There's tragedy there, and I don't want to be picking at that, but I've got to learn more about that later on my own. Thanks for mentioning it, Kitty. And
you bet.
Oh, geez. Oh, man. What else do you have?
I just have one more mention, Tom. I know I unloaded a lot for you there.
That's okay. We're golden.
One more mention. our Marley Schumacher intern writer from Silver Bay's William Kelly High School has a piece this week. I learned something new about her this week. She's a cello player who performs with the high school band, and she also has just recently taken a new gig with doing the accompaniment for the Community Voice program coming up on December 10th in Silver Bay. So check that out. I think I'm going to try and be there. I love the cello, and I think that sounds sweet.
Well, I think that is exemplary and splendid. And she's playing with the high school band, you said, the high school orchestra.
Yeah.
I flashed momentarily on a video I saw of a cello player in a marching band, and it was a whole nother concept. And my hat's off to Ms. Schumacher for her outstanding time management skills, doing all that she does and still getting it all done.
Yep.
Oh, golly.
She's quite something.
Well,
was
there
any... That's all I got this week.
Oh, that's all you got. Well, if that's all you got, that's enough then. to our listeners out there who have been tuned in, thank you for that. We'll see you on the radio again next week. And to you, Kitty, as well, thank you. And bye for now.
Bye, Tom. Thank you.